Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the 8-Bit Adventures podcast. This is episode 288, and we've got a couple news topics today. Unfortunately, both Nintendo and Sony decided they're going to drop presentations tomorrow. So I may do a video, sort of a reaction video for the Direct. I've never done one of those before, so maybe we'll do a sort of live reaction of that, and I'll post it, maybe, and some of my thoughts and analysis. But I hope everyone's been doing well. Welcome to the 8-Bit Adventures podcast. I'm your host, Sean Hayes, and I'm here to bring you the latest and greatest geeky news of the week. I remembered it this time. Albeit a little late, but, So some interesting stuff, a big Lorcana announcement. And I've got some fancy graphics for those that are watching the video version of this podcast. Some gaming news and stuff. I apologize for not having podcasts out the past 2 weeks. I have been dealing with mono. Which for those who have been keeping score and have been following along, this is the mono has come on the tails of COVID. That's real fun, is having, that probably the most notorious sort of fatigue disease, on top of, recovering from thyroid cancer and an autoimmune disorder and all this other stuff. I couldn't make it work, folks. So we're here this week. Have some other issues that I'm still powering through, but we're able to do it. If I can get stuff sorted out, maybe we'll start doing some other streams again in the future. Trying to shift up my schedule a little bit. Because it'd be fun to do that. And unfortunately, until I get a lot of the health problems fixed for those who were longtime fans of the comic, that kind of led to the creation of 8-Bit Adventures. I just haven't been able to do anything artistically. I can't make it work. However, folks don't tune in to hear me whine about my health problems. You tune in for gaming news. So that's what we're going to talk about. And we've got some fun stuff. So why don't we get right into it? All right, so let's get our topics up here. Okay. First up, Gearbox Entertainment. Reuters reports that Embracer is exploring options to sell the Borderlands developer and supposedly has a few interested parties. Both The Verge and Polygon sort of add on to this report that the deal is likely to help Embracer stabilize after going on a spending spree to just acquire all sorts of studios, including, I can't remember if it was Eidos or Crystal Dynamics. They acquired the Tomb Raider franchise on studios and licensing. They also spent a bunch of big money to acquire, it's Middle Earth Entertainment to get all the Lord of the Rings licenses. They spent all that money, got a bunch of projects in the works, but then they lost out on a $2 billion investment deal, which was reportedly from a Saudi government-funded investment group called Savvy Games Group. So this is that group that I've kind of talked about before, of sort of the Saudi government trying to get its hands in a bunch of, different industries, and gaming was one of them, of just, throwing out seemingly endless amounts of money to become a major shareholder in various companies. The fact that they're now looking at, oh no, we bought too much, we dug too deep and too greedily, and now we have to sell off some things. I think this will be good for Gearbox. You know, I don't know who the interested parties are. They kind of spoke on anonymity. You know, being an independent developer is scary, but I think Gearbox is one that could probably benefit from doing that. This also comes after Gearbox was forced to do layoffs from Embracer, like a couple years ago. So it would be nice to see them get back on their feet. I don't know if Microsoft is one of the interested parties given their sort of recent spending spree, although I could see Microsoft being a little bearish on wanting to acquire more studios since they're still going through the approval for Activision Blizzard. So we'll have to see what happens with that. Next up, The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, Polygon, reports that in an interview with Famitsu, Eiji Onuma, the producer of the game, has stated that there are no plans for new content for the game. So unlike what we got with Breath of the Wild, where we got the expansion pass, there is no plan to do that with this game. And also stated that the team is looking forward to the, quote, next fun experience to work on, end quote. So it seems like they're kind of done. Like, they put as much as they could into the game, and there's not really any plans to do any additional content for that. And whether they get moved on to the next Zelda project or something different, they're just looking forward to the next fun experience. I believe Onuma's also said that for whatever the next Zelda game becomes, it's unlikely that they're going to return to this version of Hyrule. So whether that means it's not going to be sort of an open world experience again or what, I don't really know. I think it would be really interesting to get them to do, like, in terms of scope of the world, something a little more, like Skyrim-esque, which is what they kind of tried to do with Breath of the Wild. But I feel like maybe in terms of scale, even just like the landscape, you know, make it a little more populated maybe, you know, and maybe some more interesting side quests that matter, I think. But we'll see, you know, looking forward to seeing what the Zelda team is going to be working on next, regardless of whether it's a Zelda project or not. Okay, next up, Lorcana. This is the one I'm most excited to talk about this week. So IGN reports that Rise of the Floodborne has been revealed as the next set. So this is sort of the chapter two, quote unquote, and along with spoilers of several cards, which I have those images, and I'm going to talk about each of them and sort of my take on them. But properties showcased in the set will include Winnie the Pooh, The Princess and the Frog, The Jungle Book, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, The Great Mouse Detective, that's a little bit of a deep cut, Pinocchio, Zootopia, and Raya and the Last Dragon. This set will introduce the new mechanic called Resist, which is basically like armor. It's just straight up damage reduction. And the story for the set hints that King Triton's trident, say that three times fast, and Ursula have something to do with the incident that caused the creation of the Floodborn. So the story around Lorcana is like magical ink. And the characters are known as glimmers, are sort of like echoes from the ink. And there was some sort of event that caused like a great flood of ink that certain characters became infused with this like mixture of ink and became sort of supercharged versions of themselves. And this is noted in cards that are denoted as Floodborn, in which they are able to be upgraded. They're the only cards that have a mechanic called Shift, where you can pay a reduced cost to replace an existing character of that type in play. So like you might have like a genie card in play, and then there's a floodborn genie where if you play him on top of your existing genie, you can play him for less. And they're meant to be sort of like essentially like an alternate universe type thing where something's very different about the character. Like maybe they succeeded. You know, there's a Hades where he became King of Olympus. I'm trying to think of any other Floodborn stuff, and I'm drawing a blank. But essentially, you know, it's stuff like that. Or there's one for Jasmine where she's Queen of Agrabah. So things were like something plays out very differently in the story, and they're usually like a bit more powerful too. But yeah, so that Triton and Ursula have something to do with this incident. And what's interesting is that there are some astute folks who have pointed out that two of the cards in Chapter 1 set allude to this. And I'm going to put them up on screen here. And that's a Mickey Mouse card called Mickey Mouse Detective and the Duke of Wesselton, where both of them are like inspecting sort of purple seaweed that's covered in ink. And purple seaweed is sort of Ursula's MO. And so in the art sort of like hints at like investigating what went on with this incident. Like that's cool. I love stuff like that. And I love stuff like that, like from Magic. That I don't know if they really do that kind of stuff that much these days, but like it was wild, you know, 20 years ago, playing Magic, or even dare I say 25 years ago, and just all the little details and stuff that you could like pick out of various cards and be like, oh, that's a reference to that thing and this thing. But as far as the cards themselves, as we'll take a look, we got some previews. So we got previews of the Queen from Snow White. We're getting another Mickey Mouse card and another song. I think our first song from Hercules, which is Zero to Hero, perennial favorite. These are all pretty powerful. So the Queen is an inkable card, which means you can use her for resources. Costs 5. It has 4 power, 3 willpower, which is your power toughness. This is a Floodborn card, so it has that shift mechanic, which is 2. So if you have the Queen in play, you could, instead of paying 5, pay 2 to put her into play, and you play her on top of an existing Queen character. And whenever this character quests, which is how you earn points and win the game in Lorcana, you choose an enemy character, and their power is reduced by 4 this turn, and one of your characters has their power increased by 4 this turn. So, you know, this will go great in there's like a ruby amber princess deck. I think that this will go pretty well in that is focused on sort of being aggressive in attacking your opponent's characters. So I could see this being a great card for that. And when the Queen quests, she gets 2 points. So that's pretty decent. Zero to Hero is a cheap song to play. It costs 2. And because it's a song, you can play it for free if you have a character that costs 2 or more. And it basically, you count the number of characters you have in play, and you reduce the cost of your next character that you play this turn by that amount. This is pretty good. Amber in particular likes to is a go wide color. And so this just plays right into just flooding the board with more and more characters. And then this, you could flood the board with all your cheapies and then play this song and then just like drop a big bomb card. And then Mickey, Mickey's an inkable card. He costs 6, 1 power, 6 willpower. Whenever he quests, and he quests for 3 points, so that's really good. You pay 3 less for the next character you play this turn. So again, really establishing that go wide strategy for Amber, I think is going to play a big part in really reinforcing that strategy. Oh my goodness. And wow. It's already been like 20 minutes. So we'll try and make this quick. For Amethyst, we've got Winnie the Pooh. Winnie the Pooh is just a vanilla card, but it's great. He is sort of a honey wizard. So the art in particular is amazing. I would say if you're an audio listener, go check it out. It's like a very beautifully illustrated, like Pooh Bear with like a big wizard robe, and his staff is a, like a honey dipper. And he's like sitting on top of a floating, beehive with honey sort of swirling all around him. And he's just a 5/5, 4/5 that quests for 2. No special abilities. The Sorcerer's Spellbook, which is an item for Amethyst where you can exert it, which is this game's version of tapping, to gain a point. Ruby gets an interesting card. So they also get Raya. Raya, sort of like Pooh, is a 5/3 for 4 that quests for 1. Not very exciting, and it's just an uncommon, so I expect we'll see probably certainly a Floodborn version, I would expect, and maybe a Dreamborn, like an enhanced Dreamborn version. But Dinner Bell, which is from Great Mouse Detective. So it's an item that you can exert it and pay 2, and you pick one of your characters and you draw cards equal to the damage on them. And then you send them to your discard pile. You banish them. This is super interesting, and I've been waiting to see if they're going to do card draw for all of the colors that has sort of an interesting twist on it, like they do for Magic, where green now has card draw that is based on your creatures, and like white sort of gets card draw that is symmetrical with opponents. And like red doesn't get card draw, but it's you like reveal cards from the top of your deck and you get to play them this turn, but if you don't, they're like just removed from the game. So I think interesting things like that they're doing in Magic then transport over here. So like red or Ruby in Lorcana is basically about like taking your characters and running them into opposing characters to sort of control the board. And so having card draw based on that, I think is really interesting. You know, Amber kind of has some card draw in like having cheapy creatures out or healing. Purple just has straight up card draw. Blue has sort of weird card draw, and it's like you look at like the top two cards, like the top several cards of your deck, and then like you pick one and you put the rest on the bottom. And steel is just looting. Like it there is no like straight up card draw. It's just straight looting the entire time, which I think is fun. So for Emerald and Sapphire, we have Belle and Gaston. So these are both Floodborn cards. So there's a sort of alternate universe takes or whatever. So in this one, Belle is a ranger. Love it already. She's sort of a souped up version of Flynn Rider, where Flynn in chapter 1 is he's a very powerful questing card early game. And when somebody tries to attack him, that player has to discard a card. So Bell does the same thing, but they have to discard all the cards in their hand. So that's really powerful. And Gaston becomes an intellectual powerhouse. And that's great. And like when when you play him, you draw a card. And then he also quests for a lot. So I'm super excited. I love both these cards. I think they're fantastic. Like Gaston having card draw is just awesome. I'm waiting to see if they have, other Gastons, because right now there's only one and he's in Ruby. And it does not mesh well. he can't quest, like he can't score you points. All he does is you just run him into enemy characters. And then for Steel, we've got Cinderella and Tiana. So Cinderella is a Floodborn where she becomes a knight. And she has the ability of whenever you play a song, which is a type of action card, this character may challenge ready characters this turn. So normally, if a character is ready or untapped, if you will, like they can't be attacked. So this is like really honing in on a sort of, there's currently an archetype called Steel Song where, you play Steel and it's usually Amber and you play a lot of songs and like get some sort of synergy with your princesses and everything. This sort of reinforces that, and has resist +2. So damage dealt to this character is reduced by 2. So this means she just ignores a lot of cheapy, like low cost characters. Tiana also has resist +2. And while this character is exerted and you have no cards in hand, which happens a lot with Steel, opponents can't play actions. So fantastic tech against, sort of Emerald and Ruby that, really go for a lot of like action playing. But even like it can also prevent your opponents from playing songs, and ever ubiquitous like card draw effects that like Amethyst has. So, for those who are not familiar with Lorcana, probably just went completely over your heads, but, you know, I hope, just that little preview, shows like some of what is coming. So I'm very excited. I'm fortunate enough where I was able to get enough cards. So I was able to complete a set of chapter one, and then like also have enough other cards to build a bunch of decks. So very fortunate. There's a lot of folks who are not in that position at all. My hope is chapter two, they definitely have more, or places like put sort of, purchasing limits in play, to kind of counteract, a lot of the complaints. Because it seems like a lot of places are trying to instead inflate the prices on things. And like, while that is a version of sort of demand control, it's not the greatest one. You know, our local game store, you know, Mana Crypt, you know, they put in purchase limits for things. You know, you can only get standard decks if it's during a play event and you can only get one. You can only get 10 booster packs. You know, per day and only 20 per household per day, so that you can't, you know, like if you have kids that are old enough, you can't have like, you know, you and your three kids go in and buy 40 packs, and just wipe out the store. You know, and stuff was clipped, you know, in an effort to curb, folks who are looking at just reselling things. Or you know, buying packs and then immediately turning around and reselling them for a jacked up price. So to encourage folks to open packs to then play. So my hope is more places do that kind of stuff. And that is arriving in either October or November. I think hang on. I'm going to check. Hold on. It's speaking of Mana Crypt. This was posted in their Discord, of when that stuff is coming. It is coming at some point. Oh, I guess it wasn't posted there. Ah, no, here it is. Local game store release will be on November 17th. And wide release, so that's your big box store is GameStop, on December 1st. So kind of trying to time it with the holiday season. So yeah. All right. Gonna get through this other stuff really quick. Try to. Nintendo will be showcasing a Direct focusing on winter releases on Thursday, September 14th at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Again, you know, they couldn't have moved it forward a day. Similarly, Sony will also be showcasing a State of Play focusing on third-party and indie titles September 14th at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's just sort of going with the meme of Sony's just going to copy whatever Nintendo does, but also do it, like, later. So, you know, I may check out both. You know, I will definitely, you know, try and do a reaction video for the Direct. I may not do it for the State of Play, but be interesting. You know, I think it would be interesting for me being a little bit of a Nintendo fanboy, but to see my thought, you know, a little bit measured at this point because I'm old and tired, but just thoughts and analysis in real time. So. Next up, The Sims 5. IGN reports that The Sims 5 will be free to download, according to EA. The game will apparently coexist alongside The Sims 4. It's, for whatever reason, not going to replace it, but I think we'll see how well EA sticks to that. And will include both free updates for things that they deem are, you know, like kind of basic and core enough that all players should benefit from it, as well as DLC packs, like purchasable packs, and expansions and stuff for, you know, things that, they feel like build upon that and they want you to pay for. This should surprise no one. The title is still in early development. Now perhaps the second biggest or the biggest news of the past week, reported by IGN and Polygon, Unity revealed a new pricing structure that it's sort of being dubbed the Unity runtime fee. Unity's fee structure. Sorry, reading my notes and like I wrote that one first, like early this morning, and I was like half asleep. So their original plan that they announced was to charge developers a flat fee every time a game made with Unity is installed after reaching a certain threshold, as opposed to a rev share model used by Unreal Engine. So Unreal Engine is 5% of your sales after you make $1 million in sales, I believe. So I say original fee structure because they have since walked back several points after just universal complaints from the development community. So the lowest tier, Unity Personal or Unity Plus, would require a 20-cent fee for every install after reaching $200,000 in revenue over the past 12 months and 200,000 life-to-date installs. So, and then Unity confirmed in an interview with Axios that deleting and reinstalling a title counts as a separate install, much in the same way that if you buy it once from Steam and then you install it on your Steam Deck, your laptop, and your desktop, that's three separate installs. This is terrible. this is no doubt the brainchild of their CEO who used to be the EA CEO. So we're going to leave that factoid there. But yeah, no, this is terrible. They had to walk, you know, and quote unquote stipulate that charity bundles would not be affected, that Microsoft would be paying this fee for games that are released on Game Pass. And like, if you release a demo, as long as the demo is not the full game, then it would not trip this or whatever. But it's using some sort of security thing in Unity that detects like when it's installed. So it's the fact that like if you uninstall something from your machine and then reinstall it later, and let's say you do that a couple times because like you have limited hard drive space, each of those installs, it's installs, not sales, each of those installations would cost the original developer 20 cents. Now, some developers have pointed out if you make a free-to-play game, that your goal is to, you know, you release it free-to-play and then you survive on, you know, let's say you do an ethical Path of Exile model where it's all cosmetics and stuff, you know, and maybe some quality of life features, but the game itself, it's free, and then it's actually like cosmetics and stuff like that. And I think one developer pointed out, like, you know, you do a game like this, you get 3 million downloads and you make the 200,000 in revenue. You are now going to get charged that 20 cents for 2.8 million installs. And it's something so that you now owe Unity like $560,000. So you actually lost like $300,000, like over $300,000 on your game that got a million, that got 3 million installs and, you know, made you money, or that should make you money. So this is terrible. A lot of indie devs are now panicking, are telling people like, don't install my game. Like, if you want to buy it, go ahead, but like, don't install it, please. And it would also be retroactive, is the other thing. So now, like, suddenly, developers that released games like years ago are going to be hit with new fees. And a couple of people point out, like, I guess apparently there were lifetime licenses to prevent this sort of thing that this will now be applied to. So it's like, also, I expect there may be a lawsuit going into this, like, unless they completely walk it back. Like, I'm sure, even just based on if you paid for a lifetime license, so that it's supposed to be a one-time fee, that adding in fees after the fact, like, unless they slipped it into the contract somewhere, like, that should render it null and void. So I expect maybe there to be a shift from Unity to Unreal Engine in the future. And if you're an indie dev, you know, take note and watch out. You know, if you expect it maybe to not get to that level, sure, go ahead. But if you, you know, I mean, the goal obviously is to have your game like be really good and to like a lot of people play it. So, you know, if it's something that you want for it to like blow up and be go viral and everything, you may want to look at a different game engine than Unity. Which, you know, it's terrible, that this is happening, because a lot of people were using it because it had a really nice sort of low barrier to entry, and a lot of devs were able to like wrap their head around it. And the pricing structure was pretty good to make it competitive with Unreal Engine. And now it's just like a really terrible cash grab. Which, you know, as a reminder, I mean, former CEO of EA, notably the most hated company in America. So there we go. All right. This is going to wrap up our show for this week. Thank you all for joining me. If you'd like to Learn more about 8-Bit Adventures, you can check out the website, 8bitadventures.com. That's the number 8bitadventures.com. Over there, you can find, you know, my comic. You can find episodes of this podcast. Some episodes of other podcasts like Berkshire Bites that my wife and I did for a while. And if you'd like to help support that content, the best way to do that is to become a patron at patreon.com/8bitadventures. I would like to give a big shout out and thank you to all of the current patrons. Thank you for your continued support. You can also support this podcast by, if you're an audio listener, rating it 5 stars on the Apple Podcasts app. Because I guess like it's no longer in iTunes. I don't know how it works anymore. But giving it 5 stars, 5-star review, or if you're a listener or watcher on YouTube, make sure like, subscribe, get notifications, and all that stuff so that you can be notified when this goes live. Finally, our opening theme is One Up by Professor Shy Guy. You can find his work over at professorshyguy.bandcamp.com. And with that, and these are all in the various show notes that get put either in the podcast for whether it's in audio format or in video format, it'll be in the description of the episode. And with that, that's it. So thank you all for joining me. And as always, have fun, happy gaming, and enjoy your pie cake.